from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the battle over how to classify workers is in the state legislature, with two competing bills now at play in Sacramento. Last year's state Supreme Court ruling made it harder to label workers independent contractors, but Uber, Lyft, and other companies in the gig economy want to change that. The results could have big implications for the rest of the country. We look at the issues next on Forum. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The California Supreme Court last year opened the door to more workers, like drivers for Uber, to be deemed employees rather than independent contractors. And now a San Diego legislator has introduced a bill to codify that ruling, which would be a big win for labor. But some contractors and business groups oppose the bill, thus ensuring that classifying workers will be a dominant issue in Sacramento, with a new governor who's supported both by labor and tech. Joining me now to look at the situation is Sam Harnett. He's a Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mina.
Also with us is Caitlin Vega. She's legislative director of the California Labor Federation. Good morning, Caitlin Vega.
Hi, good morning.
And also Marla Kanemitsu is with us. She's with Tusk Strategies. Good morning, Marla Kanemitsu.
Good morning.
Well, Sam, I'm going to start with you. So can you just give us a quick review of the court ruling that happened last year and the ABC test that emerged from it?
Right. As you said, Mina, this court ruling was deemed a huge win for labor advocates. And what it did was it made it harder for a company to argue that their workers are contractors. Now, to argue your worker is a contractor, you have to prove three things. That's the ABCs, right? The A is that the worker is free from control and direction of the company. B, that the work that the worker is doing is outside the course of what the company normally does. And three, that the work that the person is doing is something that the person does outside of this job. So if you look at like an Uber model, right, you'd say, okay, is the Uber driver doing something that's core to Uber's business? Is the Uber driver free of control from Uber? Is Uber exerting control over that worker or not? And does that Uber driver do that kind of driving outside of working for Uber? And it would have to prove those three things.
All three have to be met.
Right.
Well, Caitlin Vega, why are you supporting the effort to make this ABC test state law?
Thank you. Thank you for the question, and thank you for having me on. When the Supreme Court issued this decision last April, I think from a worker advocacy perspective, from a labor perspective, we felt that it was really a long time coming, because what we've seen is a gradual expansion in the use of the independent contractor model in a way that has brought down wages and working conditions in many, many industries and shifted a lot of the risk off of the traditional employment relationship onto the backs of workers. And so when the decision was issued, we really looked at it as an opportunity to bring millions of workers into employee status, into the middle class, into the right to minimum wage, the right to join unions, the right to get unemployment benefits if you get laid off. So from our perspective, I would say one of the best court decisions in many decades for ensuring workers' rights. What we're trying to do with the bill, AB 5, Dynamex is the law of the land. The ABC test is the law. What we're trying to do with this bill is actually two things. One, enshrine that ruling, make clear how important that ruling is, and clarify the way that it will be applied in state law. That's number one. Number two is create the opportunity for us to have conversations with those who may have, may see a unique impact from the Dynamex ruling and who want to work with us on that.
Before I go to Marla Kanemitsu, Sam Harnett, I just wanted you to remind us what the Dynamex company was doing, just what the case was quickly so that people understand why this is being called the Dynamex decision?
Right. Dynamex was a trucking company. They had a bunch of truckers that they were saying were independent contractors. The truckers said, hey, no, we're trucking. We're doing the
job. Your normal course of
business. Yeah, the normal course of business. So we should be treated as employees so we can get overtime, workers' compensation, a guaranteed minimum wage, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was the court case, and all went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was judged that the drivers had a case.
Now, Marla Kanemitsu, this Dynamex decision, labor saying an important decision in terms of protecting workers' rights, and also that the bill is necessary to provide clarity, essentially. Do you agree?
I think the Dynamex decision is very important and very impactful. There's no doubt about that. That's certain. But you have all across the country, you've had independent contractors for decades. It's an established type of work arrangement, and it's very common in a lot of different industries because it's the best fit for that industry. And there are a lot of workers who prefer that model because it's the best fit for that particular worker. The dividing line between who's a contractor and who's an employee has always been a murky one, to put it mildly. Over decades, tests have been created, and those tests have been interpreted by the courts. And you have had industries and people who are in the workforce basically build their lives, their income, around these different types of work models based on the current state of the law as they understood it. The problem with Dynamex is that it has taken that body of law, and I agree with Caitlin, it's essentially thrown it out the window, implementing a whole new test. And one of the problems is that they did this through judicial fiat, not through the legislature. And I'm not aware of any other situation where a test like this has been changed just by a court decision rather than through the legislature. So the problem is every industry and every contractor in California that thought they knew what the rules were, they're all left in a state of confusion and uncertainty. And again, this is a model that a lot of people prefer and a lot of people have built their careers around.
You mean the model pre the Supreme Court decision?
Correct. The independent contractor model.
And because you're saying, if I'm understanding you correctly, that it gives more freedom for the employer and the contractor to figure out a solution or a working situation that works best for both.
Correct. I don't think everybody should work as an independent contractor. That's not a model that works for everyone. But nor do I think everybody should be forced into an employee model. There are a lot of people that prefer working as a contractor because of a lot of the things you just identified. It gives them a lot more flexibility and control over where, when they want to work, how much they want to earn. I've talked to a lot of people who actually left jobs as employees to become a contractor because they make more money doing it. They may be building their own business. There are a lot of different reasons why people prefer that work model, and I don't think we should just throw that out.
Well, if you'd like things to be coming from the legislature, why don't you support AB 5, which is the bill that wants to codify the Supreme Court's decision? Is it just because you feel that to be too intrusive?
Well, right now, AB 5 is what I refer to as a shell bill. The actual content of the bill hasn't yet been developed. It's something that I believe discussions are still ongoing about. So I think whether I personally would think it's a good bill or not is yet to be seen, because we don't yet know exactly what it's going to say.
And Sam Harnett, can you just clarify what has happened to the legislature? So these are placeholder bills. There is the one from the San Diego legislator, Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher, but there's also another one, correct?
Yes, there was another bill that came out at the same time, which would basically roll back Dynamex. That was from Melissa Melendez, Assembly Bill 71. So basically two competing bills got put out at the same time. Yeah, they're both in the legislature. I think what's interesting is that, it just basically set up it basically shows how important this decision was and how much immediate reaction there was. On labor wanted to sort of codify the ruling, and some members of the business community wanted to roll it back and go to the old test.
But we don't know for sure what the content of these bills will be at this point. Are they still fairly in a skeleton stage because they were placeholders, or was one
Caitlin
of them more?
Can probably speak more specifically to that, but from my understanding, yeah, they're not completely hashed out yet.
Caitlin Vega, do you have a sense of what was in the competing bill that was introduced by a Republican lawmaker?
I believe that bill was, as she mentioned, Sam mentioned, was just a repeal of the Dynamex decision.
I see.
If I could, though, just respond to some of the points made I think I would be the first to say, absolutely, there are people who want to work as independent contractors and want to start their own businesses. And from our perspective, that's not what the Dynamex case is about. The Dynamex case is about a particular business model where a company says, I'm going to go into package delivery or I'm going to go into trucking, but instead of hiring any employees to do the work and instead of me having any responsibility for those workers, I'm going to pretend that they are their own businesses. I'm going to call them independent contractors, and then I'm going to tell them what to do and how to do it, and I'm going to make all the money off the transaction. And those workers will have no safety net in place. I will have no rights and protections like other workers. And so not only is it a model that is exploitative of the workforce, it's unfair competition to the vast majority of employers who follow the law. Most employers are not engaged in misclassification. And so I would just say, if from my perspective, the Dynamex case is not about whether or not we should have independent contractors. Of course, there's a role for legitimate independent contractors. I think the case is really about this practice of misclassification and can we develop a clear, simple test so everyone understands what the rules are.
And again, Caitlin Vega is Legislative Director of the California Labor Federation. Marla Kanemitsu is with Tusk Strategies and has been working with companies on the independent contractor issue for 4 years now. Sam Harnett is a Silicon Valley reporter with KQED. And I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. We're looking at how the battle over classifying workers as either employees or independent contractors, how it could play out in Sacramento. There are two competing bills now making their way through the state legislature. And we want to know what your questions or thoughts, concerns are around what it means to be an independent contractor in the state of California. Do you support the Supreme Court ruling and feel like independent contractors have been exploited by employers, as Caitlin Vega was saying, that are deliberately trying to misclassify them? Or do you want to stay an independent contractor and are worried the law could make that harder? Give us a call at 866-733-6786, or a law could make that harder. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, on Twitter, at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Sam Harnett, on this question of misclassification, how do employers, the ones that do engage in, say, trying to classify workers differently, how do they go about it? I know that the Uber way of doing it has been studied quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, we should back up one step and just explain, too, that classifying someone as an independent contractor saves a company a lot of money. Right. I mean, this is just companies make a lot of money, a lot more money if you're a contractor versus an employee.
Yes. Good point. Just remind us quickly what contractors don't get that employees
do. So contractors have to pay their own taxes. They're not guaranteed minimum wage. They don't get overtime. They don't have benefits like workers' comp. So employers have to pick up a lot of that slack. And there's a bunch of studies, but some number has been thrown around a bit is that it's one third as expensive to have an employee as a contractor. So businesses want contractors because it's cheaper. Now, that has been going on in the economy for a long time, that companies have been trying really hard to get rid of employees and get contractors because they're cheaper. With the companies like Uber, you've seen an evolution of that. And it's been a lot of people have called it platform capitalism, which I think is an interesting term for it. And basically, Uber came on the scene and said, hey, listen, we are not a taxi company. We don't have drivers. We don't hire drivers to do our business. We're a tech company, and we make a platform or a marketplace that connects riders to independent drivers. And in that case, they're not core to our business because we actually make tech. We're a tech company. And this is an argument that successive gig companies, Handy, Postmates, Lyft even, have used this argument to say, hey, these people doing this job are actually contractors, not employees. And so that model has kind of ramped up something that's been happening in the economy for quite some time.
Well, Marla Kanemitsu, your thoughts on how really employers just want to save money.
So I disagree with that. I think that this is a model that has ramifications, not just for the worker. And as both I think Caitlin and Sam agreed, there are people who I think can benefit from that and find it attractive. But for the company, the only implication is not a savings implication. There are a lot of restraints that come with using independent contractors. Before the Dynamex decision, the analysis, and this is the analysis that applies in a lot of different states, looks at the degree of control that the company exerts over the worker. If they are using independent contractors, you cannot dictate how they do their job. You can dictate what needs to be done, but not how they do it. So, early in the days of a lot of the on-demand sectors, they would tell them, you know, these are the exact way you need to greet someone. This is, we want you to wear a uniform. We want you to undergo this training. All of that has now been changed, and companies are no longer doing that because they realize that that's not an independent contractor relationship. Those aren't indicia of an independent contractor relationship. So, for example, if you want to have someone who can staff your restaurant and be there on Monday, Wednesday, Friday from set hours, wear a uniform, undergo training, you can't do that under pre-Dynamex law because that's exerting a lot of control over them. So if you're a business, it's not a choice, just a labeling choice to save money. There are a lot of restraints that come with using contractors, and that's a business decision that businesses have to make.
But you do save money, don't you? Is that?
They can save money in some cases on the benefit, you know, the things like payroll taxes and that sort of thing. Yes, that's true. But in a lot of ways, too, they pay people. People can make more money. Sometimes they end up paying people more because there's more of a, you have to deal with negotiating with more people for that particular job.
Well, we have a lot of calls coming in. Let me start with Doug in San Francisco. Hi, Doug.
Hi. My name's Doug Block, and I'm the political director with the Teamsters Union in Northern California, and thank you for covering this important subject. I just want to say that this independent contractor model rose out of the ashes of trucking deregulation in the 1980s. We've been fighting it for over 30 years. And a key point I think missing from the conversation is that independent contractors have no right to organize a union. Dynamex was a package company that competes directly with United Parcel Service, who employs 250,000 Teamsters in good living wage middle class jobs. So this court ruling is very important to our union. The state has invested a lot of money in fighting misclassification at our ports, and we're working closely with Caitlin and the Labor Federation on AB5. And the last thing I want to say, I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the old test, Borrello, with all due respect to one of your guests today, was also established through a Supreme Court ruling. This has not been the business of the legislature to establish these tests. Thank you.
Well, Doug, thank you for sharing that point. I want to go to Greg next in Redwood City. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. I just want to say, you know, it's kind of funny that listening to the guests, you know, like one guest mentioned that it's like a marketplace and Uber and Lyft are like a tech company, but they're dictating the rates. We're not, you know, as contractors, supposedly, we're not saying, okay, I'm not going to Carmel. Like, you know, there's a list of things that they're trying to get away with. And yeah, they're not telling us what to wear, but overnight they can change our pricing and how much we get paid. I mean, one day to the next, you know, I make 25% less because they just decided to, and there was no notice, there was no, or, you know, a conversation about it or anything. These are dictated prices to us. They're getting away with pocketing the money. So me and a bunch of other Uber and Lyft drivers are dumping Uber and Lyft and opening a co-op rideshare called Go Zero Emissions. And we're able to offer the workman's comp insurance and, you know, workman's protections. It's just they're trying to pocket it. And, you know, these legislators are moving so slowly, and, you know, putting these workers in jeopardy.
Well, Greg, thanks for your point. Marla Kanemitsu, do you think that Uber drivers are independent contractors or employees?
I'm not going to opine on that. I have not looked at all of their business model facts, so I honestly just can't opine on that.
What do you think, Sam Harnett, in terms of the universe, though, of Uber drivers or Lyft drivers or independent contractors, which is much broader than just these drivers? We should also make sure that...
I think the gig economy gets outsized attention, but actually it is a small percentage of how many people are independent contractors, so that's important to say.
And just remind us what the roles are of other independent contractors, typically, that are big as well.
Yeah, well, independent contractors are supposed to be doing things that are not core to the business. The idea is sort of like that you have your own business and you're an entrepreneur. I worked as an independent contractor as a freelance journalist, and in that moment, the people I was reporting for didn't tell me what to do, and I would bring stories to them. And but I think what's interesting to keep in mind is I've talked to a lot of Uber and Lyft drivers, and they say, hey, yeah, we love the flexibility. We don't want a boss. Honestly, they think of the, like, nightmare 9-to-5 employee scenario of working in an office and being told what to do all the time. But if you ask them, hey, would you take, like, a workers' comp and minimum wage guarantees and overtime if you still had a lot of flexibility? They're like, yeah, sure. So really the question becomes, like, you know, being an employee and having a boss that bosses you around all the time is terrible, but being an independent contractor without having a safety net is also terrible. So I think that drivers really want to maintain the flexibility but have the benefits. Which, well, I mean, why is that crazy, I guess, is the question we should all have. Like, why is that such a crazy thing to want?
Yes, Caitlin Vega, I wanted you to weigh in.
Thank you. I think from our perspective, what we saw going on before the Dynamex decision is that a lot of companies want to have their cake and eat it, too, in terms of maintaining a lot of that control, running a business entirely on the work of people who you claim no responsibility for, and shifting all that risk onto workers. And I think that the Uber driver that called in kind of captured that. They're setting the rates. They're telling you, you know, what you have to do and how much you're going to make for it. That doesn't sound like you're an independent business in control. And the other thing I think is really important to point out is there is no rule that being a W-2 employee can't come with flexibility. All kinds of employers offer flexibility. All kinds of jobs have all kinds of different work rules. In fact, many companies have switched to just-in-time scheduling where workers get called that day and told there's a shift available. There is no reason that any of these companies can't have a flexible workforce and still offer the core safety net obligations. I just want to point out we focused a lot on the costliest ones, which, of course, are, you know, workers' comp and unemployment insurance, which are critical. But also we're talking about, do you even have a right to be paid for the hours that you work? We're talking about, do you have the right to be free from sexual harassment and discrimination on the job? We're talking about paid family leave. Every right that we fight for as the labor movement is denied to people who are classified as contractors. That's why this decision is so important. It's about workers' ability to earn a living, and it's about our ability to ensure basic labor standards for the workforce of California.
And again, Caitlin Vega is a legislative director at the California Labor Federation. We're also talking with Marla Kanemitsu. She is with Tusk Strategies and has been working with companies on independent contractor issues. And Sam Harnett, who's been reporting on this issue as a Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. And we've invited you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Right now, the battle over classifying workers is heating up, even though there was this very landmark ruling by the state's high court that made it harder to classify independent contractors as independent contractors as opposed to employees. And now two competing bills are in Sacramento making their way through the state legislature. And we want to get your thoughts, questions, experiences, either as an independent contractor or as an employee that you think are important to this conversation. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Email us, forum@kqed.org. Tweet us at KQED Forum or go to our Facebook page. We'll have more with our guests after the break, as well as whether there's any kind of middle ground here. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Last year, a California Supreme Court ruling made it harder for companies like Uber, Lyft, Instacart to label workers independent contractors. Now, competing bills that would codify what independent contractor means have been proposed in Sacramento. Some groups fear that lawmakers will water down the court's guidelines, while others are hoping for just that. And we're debating the issues with Caitlin Vega, legislative director at the California Labor Federation, Marla Kanemitsu with Tusk Strategies, and Sam Harnett, Silicon Valley reporter for KQED. And we've asked you, our listeners, to weigh in on the conversation as well. Tom tweets, a company that I think does it right with independent contractors, TaskRabbit. I've worked for TaskRabbit for almost 4 years, and they've always let me set my own pay rates and my own schedule. Marla Kanemitsu, what are you hearing from employers in terms of trying to strike a middle ground?
I think companies, it really varies by company. There are certain types of services that people provide where negotiation of rates by the contractor is easy to do, and the platforms can facilitate that. I know some platforms do facilitate that. There are others where you have a situation, for example, rideshare, where you can't, you know, somebody needs a ride to the airport. You can't have, you know, an ongoing negotiation over how much that's going to cost. There may be some middle ground there, and I do think that the one good thing about the Dynamex decision is that it has created this conversation, which I completely welcome. I think we do need to talk about how do we modernize the laws to address these ways of working. You know, independent contract, as I said, has been around for a long time, but across the country we've seen an increase in the usage of a lot of different independent work relationships and work models. And I think we need to take a look at that and see, you know, how do we modernize laws to address some of the concerns that Caitlin is raising, but also maintain these platforms and other work arrangements in a way that that protects work choice.
Well, in your reporting, Sam Harnett, have you come across middle ground solutions that are viable?
I think with the caller, just the caller who said being able to set your own price. I mean, I think that's a big thing. I mean, that workers would want. I think this is a really tricky one. And actually, we're seeing Gavin Newsom's kind of caught in the middle, right? On one side, there's labor who wants this to stand. On the other side, there's companies who would wish it would go away. So I think, you know, getting an exact compromise would be pretty tricky.
What has the governor said about this?
He hasn't said that much. He said. We need to work to see if there is some common ground, the word we just used. So
he'd like to see this outside the legislative process, potentially, or at least.
I'm not exactly sure. I think what he'd like to see, though, is that labor and these big tech companies agree and become friends because they both support him in the campaign.
Well, Tom says the test for an independent contractor or freelancer should be how many different clients the freelancer contracts with. If they drive for Uber and Lyft, the choices of clientele are limited. They are employees. True freelancers have a range of clients, and the freelancer tells the contractor how much the fee will be. Let's go to Ben in Oakland. Hi, Ben.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for reporting on this issue. I was a contractor for a year and a half in an office here, and I think within about 6 months, it felt like I was ready to be a part of the workforce, but there was no will to hire, and I think contracting is an easy way for companies to get around things like headcount and protecting their employees. And while on paper, maybe I should have been recognized as an employee, I think companies really, especially tech companies, really conveniently keep a lot of people on as contractors. And I think as a young person, it's hard to understand what that means and hard to not be taken advantage of. So I think, you know, Marla was talking about how we already have sort of legislation and rules in place, but I would say most tech companies aren't following those. Just look at what jobs are available, especially entry level, and they're almost all contractor positions, and you don't know your own rights there. So I think it's pretty exploitative right now, and thanks for legislating on this and talking about it.
Well, Ben, thanks for your point. I want to try to get Denise in. Denise in San Francisco, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I actually suggested this topic as an idea for a forum back in August, so I'm glad you're talking about it. I have been an independent consultant that is self-employed for 12 years, and I'm very concerned. I've been very concerned about the Dynamex decision because the test that the judge created is just overly broad, and I think it threatens the livelihoods of thousands of small business owners in California, like me, who have made independent consulting a profession for years.
Tell me how.
Because the test, I'll answer that question in a second. I just wanted to say these are people who wouldn't describe ourselves as part of what's known as the gig economy. You know, we've been in business long before that term existed. So it's because of you have to pass all three tests, A, B, and C. And the one that, and I'm worried that companies will be afraid to hire me or consultants like me because of the B test, that the worker performs work that is outside the usual course of a hiring entity's business. Mm. Now, you know, as a marketing consultant, I'm a specific kind of marketing consultant, which, you know, I won't take up your time with describing, but it's hard for any company to argue. You could say a company would have a hard time saying that marketing wasn't part of their core business. And one of your speakers, the journalist, mentioned, or one of your speakers mentioned having been a freelance journalist, as though that wouldn't be affected by the Dynamex decision as it stands. Well, if you were a freelance journalist selling your journalistic work to journalistic organizations, newspapers, magazines, et cetera, how could you argue that that journalism is outside the usual course of the hiring entity's business?
Well, let me get Caitlin Vega to weigh in on this because you raised some important points. Caitlin Vega with the California Labor Federation.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. I actually think that the points raised by the caller are exactly why it makes so much sense for us to codify this ruling and explore exactly the way that it should be applied. I think that there's been, you know, when this decision came out, the business community launched a big offensive against it and asked the legislature to step in and suspend the Supreme Court decision, which has never been done in history. And our sense is that a lot of people are concerned about this ruling that need not be. We do not believe the Dynamex decision prevents any company from legitimately subcontracting for specialized services. All companies do that. That's a standard practice. And I think that by codifying the bill, we can make that clear. A legitimate subcontractor relationship, you're hiring a separate business that has a specialty in helping you market. I don't think any of us feel that that's an exploitative business practice that has to be restricted. I don't think that the court would apply Dynamex in that case. And I think from our perspective, that's the benefit of doing legislation, is that we're able to make those kind of clarifications. But as we talk about compromise, I would just like to say, put it in a bigger context and say that, you know, from our perspective, the labor movement, the state of California is seeing unprecedented levels of income inequality, of poverty, of lack of access to opportunity. And corporations at the same time are making record profits, just got a huge tax cut from President Trump. And worker wages are stagnant. Working families are struggling to make ends meet, in many cases having to work multiple jobs just to get by. And so I think that it's easy for us to get caught up in, you know, an A prong and a B prong and what's the right test. But I think it's really important to step back and say, how are we going to rebuild the middle class? We can't be an economy of, you know, a very small number of very wealthy people and very wealthy corporations running the show, and working people having not only no rights and low wages, but no voice on the job. You know, obviously the right to organize, the right to join unions is how we built the middle class in this country. And unless we find a way to restore it, we're going to be stuck with this kind of unequal economy that I don't think any of us believe in.
Well, Caitlin Vega, could I get your response to this criticism that's often lobbed at labor, which is, of course, you would say that this decision would not affect employers from hiring certain contractors, because for unions, this would be a big financial win. You'd have a lot more employees you could organize. The gig economy represents a big opportunity for labor.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I would start with, I agree with Sam's point. I think there's been a lot bigger focus on the gig economy, you know, as the face of misclassification than we start out with. What we have seen in the labor movement is that our core industries, whether it's trucking or delivery services, janitorial, trucking, those core industries have been transformed by big companies converting workers from employee status to independent contractors, often overnight. Often the workers show up the next day and they're told, you all have to sign these forms saying that you're independent contractors and you no longer have any connection to us. We're not responsible for you. That has been an issue that we in the labor movement have struggled with for decades, long before the gig economy came around. And so I think that I would start there. In terms of your question, the reality is there's plenty of workers right now who are employees but are not members of unions. So I don't think that the argument is somehow if you make someone an employee, they instantly become a union member. That's certainly not our expectation. We do think, though, that every worker deserves to have that right, in addition to the right to have minimum wage for all the hours they work and every other thing that we fight for. So I will say the vast majority of workers who benefit from this decision are not union members and likely won't become union members. Just because that's the rate of unionization right now in the state. But much of the advocacy that we do is on behalf of non-union workers, trying to ensure that basic labor standards exist.
Well, let's go now to Gabriella in San Francisco. Hi, Gabriella.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, so I'm we were all independent contractors as entertainers, so more commonly known as strippers. So in San Francisco and all of California, we've all had our independent contractor title stripped away, and absolutely everyone is miserable and has been affected really negatively by this. We do not want hourly. The club is now able to tell us when to work and how they have to pay us minimum wage, so they're limited to how many girls they're allowed to have on the floor. For a lot of women that do this job, this is our way, like, out of the middle class or into, like, you know, moving up and trying to make more money. And for some of them, that's their best option, and that has been completely taken away from us. The club is now allowed to say how much we're allowed to charge, and because they're giving us minimum wage, they take a huge portion of our tips now. We used to be able to keep a majority of it, and now they take upwards of 60%. And it's just been super devastating, and it's led lots of girls to either leave the country because they can't, or leave the state because they can't afford to feed their families or themselves, or go into prostitution, which they were not doing before that.
Well, Gabriella, thanks for the call. I'd like to have Marla Kanemitsu respond to that, but as well as Cecilia Vega. But Marla, I'll start with you.
Sure. So I thank the caller for making time to call in. We've heard that from other sources as well. As I was mentioning, this is a work model that in a lot of cases has allowed people to earn more money. There are a lot of situations where, you know, you have professionals, you have other workers who, if it were converted to an employee status, you'll have companies that aren't able to use as many people, and so it decreases the number of opportunities. You won't have people necessarily being able to negotiate quite as much how much they earn. I've talked to a lot of workers who are independent contractors, and a lot of them told me that one of the main reasons they do this is they make more money.
Caitlin Vega, I'd like your reaction too, because you have been making the point that if workers want to stay independent, they can remain independent.
Right. So I think that, first of all, I just want to say I think that there are many, many workers, just to the last comment, that workers choose this because they make more money. There are many, many workers who have no choice in the matter at all. It is the only way to get work in a lot of industries. In this particular one, I'm interested to learn more. I'll be honest, I think that there are areas where there may be specific language required. Let me give a separate example of just something that I've spent more time on and come back to the caller's point, because I do appreciate her point. I think that a lot of employers also are using this decision to do things that they wanted to do anyway. There's nothing in the Dynamex decision that would authorize employers to take workers' tips. There's nothing that requires them to lower people to minimum wage. Those are all business decisions that they're choosing to make. But I appreciate her point, and I think that this shouldn't be used as an excuse to abuse workers or to cut their wages, absolutely. The thing I want to say is, again, going back to the bill, part of the reason for doing the bill is that the Dynamex decision is about a package delivery company. None of us know for sure how that would be applied. Let's say that a group of dancers sued and said they were being misclassified. It's not clear what the standard would be applied in that case, whether they would say that it fit the Dynamex model, whether they would say that those are legitimate independent contractors or not. And so I think that's the benefit to legislation, is that we're able to have some industry-specific conversations. And I said I would mention an example. The doctors came forward after that decision, and they said, we have a special way that we staff emergency rooms, and we're afraid that the Dynamex decision may be applied to that. And so we can have a conversation about, well, what's the business model there? I'm not aware of a lot of exploitation of those doctors. And so if there's a better rule that makes more sense for them, let's have that conversation and figure that out. And so I would say the same here. I would need to have a better understanding of the industry. But that's also part of the point, is for us to be able to say, Dynamex is the law of the land. That's the default rule. The vast majority of workers do better under that. If there are exceptions that need to be made, let's have those conversations, and that's the benefit of having legislation.
Well, you brought up doctors. We've had a couple of comments around doctors and hospitals. Ed writes, how does a change in law affect hospitals that contract with doctors? Iden tweets, what about the thinly veiled per diem model used by many medical institutions? My wife is a medical service provider at an SF hospital, and even with full-time hours, was not given any form of benefits, such as paid maternity leave. Marla Kanemitsu, when you hear Caitlin Vega say, you know, this law, if it's codified into law, will then allow people to examine, once it's firm and set, then you can start to have conversations about how different sectors operate, and that will allow for, you know, there's a strong foundation to begin those conversations, and that those types of relationships that employers have set won't necessarily be threatened.
I think what I heard early in the conversation was that there was a desire to codify the Dynamex test and make it, you know, part of statutory law. If you do that, it doesn't carve out doctors, it doesn't carve out dancers, it doesn't carve out any other group. And you know, I think the discussion that we're having today, where you realize the complications with having a rule that doesn't allow for flexibility, it is problematic because it doesn't account for the different types of models and different types of working arrangements that have developed over decades and that people rely on. I think you need a test that is flexible enough to recognize that there are variations and that people need those different models. So I don't think ultimately we need a statute that says, okay, if you're a doctor, here's your test. If you're a dancer, here's your test. That's not the way we generally make laws. I think we need something, though, that gives courts, gives companies, gives everybody the flexibility to recognize that there are differences. Because as written, if you codify Dynamex, there are no exceptions, as I mentioned. There's no flexibility there. The B prong, which one of the callers focused on, says, are your services part of the basic business of the company? And so if you're a doctor working at a hospital, that test won't be satisfied, meaning you won't be considered an independent contractor. If you're a dancer, that test won't be satisfied because it's part of the basic business of the operation. So under the Dynamex test, that B prong, which really has is so limiting, so restrictive, that is a problem because there's no flexibility and there are no exceptions.
But then what vehicle, Marla Kanemitsu, is the right one to enable the flexibility that you say employers and independent contractors need? I mean, is it just leaving it to the employer? That's quite a power dynamic.
No, I don't think we should just leave it to the employers. I think we need thoughtful regulations. And I do think there needs to be a dividing line between employers and independent contractors. I think that's appropriate. But what I'm saying is I think we need to come up with a test, and I think this is something that we all need to talk about, and hopefully we'll be having these conversations with the legislature. How do you create that test that gives everybody the flexibility they need, recognizes that there are differences, and facilitates that instead of just enacting the Dynamex ruling, which, as this discussion has revealed, is problematic?
Well, Emily says,
I think that's a bit confusing because before the Dynamex test, there was one test across the board called Borrello. It wasn't as though everyone made up their own test or had an industry-specific test. The Supreme Court had decided in Borrello that you looked to 11 different factors to determine whether or not somebody was an employee or an independent contractor. And all of those gig companies were sued under Borrello for misclassification, as were many trucking companies and construction companies and many others throughout the economy. There was a test. It did result in workers saying that they were misclassified, and the Supreme Court developed a clearer, better test in Dynamex.
The most significant difference.
I agree
with one point.
Caitlin Vega, I'm sorry. The most significant difference between Borrello and the ABC test as you see it, if you had to highlight one thing.
I think that what the Borrello test is a subjective test. It's a bunch of different factors that are easily manipulated. So in the Dynamex case, the workers were told you can deliver things in the order you want to deliver unless the customer says it has to be ordered and it has to be delivered at a certain time. So there was kind of fake types of independence, but really tightening that control and really trying to benefit from the work of those delivery drivers without giving them any safety protections. But the new test in Borrello really cuts through the subjectivity, and it says, let's just have three clear standards. Are you doing the regular work of the business? If it's a driving company, are you a driver? If that's the case, you should have full employee rights and benefits because the entire business is based on your labor. If you're an outside consultant providing marketing advice, that is a completely different situation. That's why we would argue, let's codify the test as the default test in California, but let's create exemptions where they're warranted.
Well, let's hear from Matt in San Francisco next. Hi, Matt. You're on.
Hi, how's it going?
Well,
I just want to thank you for having this topic. This is something that I've lost sleep over for a long time now. One of my first experiences as an independent contractor in the last 15 years working in the Bay Area was working for Electronic Arts, which is a large, you know, fourth largest software company in the world. They have a practice of working in two-year cycles on games, and they tend to hire 30 to 40 independent contractors along with their core staff to work on these games for these cycles. You sign an 18-month contract, and during that time, you're allowed to log in 39.5 hours as an employee, and then everything over that would be considered overtime. You were never able to make that half hour to make 40 hours to you know, codify you as an employee, therefore having benefits like the health insurance came with the company and a 401k, that kind of stuff. I felt like it was completely exploitative of me and the rest of the workforce because I was young. I was unable to take advantage of those things that I thought I was hiring into that company as. You know, I had eventually learned how to be an independent contractor and take care of that stuff myself, but I was shocked by the comment earlier that one of your guests had that said that making the option to hire an independent contractor, it would be to save money as a company. Like, that would be some option, one of many options for the reasons they would hire independent contractors. I mean, it seems flagrantly obvious, you know, that's the reason that it's done. And it almost leaves a taste in my mouth that it was a racket, you know. It seemed like you had so many young and, like, willing employees who were trying to, you know, do the best that they can. And there was just a shortfall afterwards where you weren't able to receive those benefits.
You know? Matt, thank you for sharing your story, and sorry about all that stress. Sam Harnett, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I think Matt brings up a good point that in the tech industry, we think of, you know, Uber and Lyft and the gig economy companies as using the contractor model, but contracting is happening a lot at name brand tech companies. You know, the Googles, the Facebooks, the Apples have contractors. And as Matt was saying, I've talked to a lot of workers who have been kind of going through the thing of working at the company for a year or two as a contractor, hoping to get a full-time job, and not getting it. And again, at those tech companies, there's kind of a class divide. Like, you know, they have different badges, they have different access to different things on campus, the different pay rates, different benefits. So this is an issue that's like all through the tech industry.
Well, Emily says, I've worked independent contractor jobs as a music teacher and yoga teacher. Small business owners of those studios stretch the definition of independent contractor to fit their needs, usually determining both rates and schedules for the teachers, as well as doing advertising and client recruitment. I would much rather be a W-2 worker than an independent contractor, but this is rarely an option in my field. Will the new law change any of this? And Leon says, we need to remember that the ABC test codified by Dynamex is already the standard in New Jersey, Massachusetts, and in employment context in some 20 states. And the sky hasn't fallen yet. Marla Kanemitsu, your thoughts?
So the test, I don't know exactly which test is in force in New Jersey and those other states. I do know that the typical ABC test across the country is different than the one that was articulated in Dynamex, particularly on the B prong. In most states, it looks at whether the service being performed is integral to the company's business or whether the service is being performed away from the premises of the business. So it allows for more flexibility because it has those two different components. The Dynamex ruling eliminated that second part of the analysis.
Well, Caitlin Vega, your response, and also just, you know, this also reminds us all that how things play out in California is being watched closely nationwide.
I think that's absolutely true. And, of course, Leo brought up a good point. This is the test, particularly around unemployment benefits in, I believe, the majority of states. And so states have found that it's important to have a more protective test because what happens is workers get laid off and then there is no safety net for them. But I think Emily's point is kind of the central one that I think is really important to highlight. And that's around this idea of flexibility. And flexibility for who? Right now, what we have seen over the last few decades is that the flexibility is really in the hands of the company. They choose how to classify people. They choose how to use that workforce. They choose whether to create a two-tier workforce where some workers have rights and benefits and others don't. They choose to call people contractors and then tell them what time they have to show up and what rate they have to charge. And I think that really what Dynamex is about is some basic fairness to say that, you know, and the court cited in the case, they said there's a rationale for the employment laws we have in this state. And that rationale is that the employment relationship is inherently unequal. It is the job of the state to create protections for working people because they do not have equal power to their employers. And I think that's what Dynamex is ultimately about, not letting employers get away with holding all the cards and maintaining an exploitative work model.
Caitlin Vega, she's Legislative Director for the California Labor Federation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks to Marla Kanemitsu of Tusk Strategies. Thanks, Marla.
Thank you.
And Sam Harnett, Silicon Valley reporter for KQED.
Thanks.
KQED Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Christina Kim, Susan Britton, and Nazli Parvizi. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Katie McMurrin. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. We say thank you and goodbye today to our wonderful interns, Kate Wolf and Josh Koh. Our executive editor is Ethan Lindsay, and our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.